I'm Afshin Ratansian. Welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, ahead of tomorrow's first day of world leaders' speeches at the UN General Assembly in New York. This amidst global war fears because of NATO member escalation of weapons to fight Russia, China and Palestine through their Ukraine, Taiwan and Israeli proxies. Arguably emblematic of the geopolitico-economic suicide of Western Europe is this week's second anniversary of the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline, supplying energy to the EU's strongest economy, Germany. Cy Hirsch on this show revealed it was a Biden-Harris terror attack. A rare and brave voice in the European Parliament under Washington puppet Ursula von der Leyen has been Mick Wallace, who, along with fellow Irish politician Claire Daly, has been a passionate voice for peace, always backing negotiation over war, equality over oligarchy. He joins me now from Italy. Mick, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. I better just get to this second anniversary of what was perhaps the largest single man-made methane emission event in human history. Not that the green parties of Europe seem to be that worried about it. You've been in the European Parliament with Ursula von der Leyen. Is she part of the cover-up?
Well, the EU showed zero appetite for the truth surrounding the destruction of Nord Stream 2. In fact, on the day that the news broke, there was actually a conference on methane emissions in the European Parliament, and I was actually asked to speak at it by the Green Party because I was on the Environment Committee as well. And I actually spoke about the issue, but the Greens, they tried to make out, oh, it's the Russians again. And about 24 hours later, they didn't want to talk about it at all because it became very clear quickly that the Russians weren't going to destroy their own pipeline. If they wanted the gas to stop going to Germany, they could turn off the tap on their end. And despite the fact that this was the largest release of methane in the history of the world, and despite the fact that this was a huge episode of environmental destruction, the Green parties across Europe did not have anything to say about it. And it speaks volumes about what they really represent when they couldn't actually even criticise the Western powers, who it was pretty obvious just who organised it, who carried it out. We're still not certain, but we're pretty sure that it was the Americans were up to their teeth in it. And the fact that von der Leyen didn't want to know about it, none of the Commission wanted to know about it, and the European members, MEPs, didn't want to know about it. And it was really a symbol of the place that the EU is in today, that they showed no appetite for this. And the fact that they were prepared to sing dumb is scary. I mean, shortly before that, you had the German Chancellor Scholz. He was in America, in Washington, with Biden. And Biden actually talked openly about the fact that the Americans close the pipeline whatever they liked. Scholz never even blinked, and he was standing beside him. Crazy.
And, I mean, there's been a crash in living standards since all those European parliamentary members in the EU Parliament and in the member states themselves have continued to pour money into Kiev. More than one in five living in poverty in the EU, 95 million people. How is it beginning to catalyse different political formations? We've seen the rise of Jean-Luc Mélenchon and Sarah Wagenknecht in Germany, as well as nationalist anti-globalisation parties that are assumed to be right-wing. They're certainly nationalist. How is it affecting Western European politics?
Well, that's hard to predict exactly where Western politics is going at the moment. I mean, we still have, despite the fact that there's huge unease with how the EU is working, it's pretty obvious that the EU serves the interests of elites and big industry rather than serves the interests of the ordinary people. But yet at the same time, You have well over 90% of the MEPs elected represent the right-wing viewpoint. And that's scary. So you kind of wonder yourself, well, how does democracy really work if the people actually don't like war, if the people like peace, and yet the parliament is full of people who like war? I mean, how do they get elected? What's happening? Where's our democracy gone? The truth be told, that there's huge disillusionment with the system. Over half the people don't vote. And the mainstream media play a large role in deciding who is elected. Big money plays a large role in who's elected. So the truth be told, our parliaments do not represent the public. They don't represent the people of Europe well. And a very good example of that was in 2022-23, as you know, there was Ukraine resolutions every month in Strasbourg in the European Parliament. And myself and Claire Daly, twice we put in an amendment to the Ukraine resolution. And our amendment called, while the parliament was jumping up and down, they couldn't give enough money to keep the war going. Our resolution called on the EU to maximise its potential to bring about dialogue and diplomacy with a view to ending the war and establishing peace. Do you know that over 80% of the MEPs voted against that on each occasion? And yet, at the same time, all the opinion polls at that time were showing that well over 80% of the people wanted peace and not war. So we have the people, over 80% of the people wanted peace. Over 80% of the politicians were prepared to support the warmongering and support the military-industrial complex that were making a fortune from the war. So we have a huge deficit in democracy in the EU, and that has been really outlined clearly, not just by the war in Ukraine, but also, obviously, in Gaza.
I mean, you sat amongst these people. British politicians are accused of being direct US security assets. Starmer in Britain, actually, I've sat next to him on a BBC programme. A trilateral commission member, a Lamy, school fees paid by Israel, lobbyists. What was your perception in the EU Parliament of the slavishness to CIA priorities de facto? What's it like? You're sitting there with them. They obviously believe in what they're saying, no matter how much remunerative potential the decision to send hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians into a meat grinder may be.
Well, I'm not so sure that they all believe what they're saying. A lot of
Ursula von der Leyen and Borrell, do they believe it?
Well, obviously, von der Leyen has been notorious, and von der Leyen is clearly a US asset. She has shown 100% support for US empire, for US imperialism. She has behaved like a total servant of US empire. And sadly, she has managed to bring much of the European Union with her. Borrell has been a bit of a mixed bag. He hasn't been as black and white as her on the issue. He has, for example, he's been terrible on Ukraine. He hasn't been quite as bad on Gaza. He hasn't been good enough. But because he comes from Spain and he comes from the Social Democrats in Spain, they're not left-wing by any means, but they're not as right-wing as many others. And Borrell has been under pressure, I'd say, from people in Spain and from politicians even in Spain to be a little bit more rational about what's going on in Gaza than von der Leyen has been.
Yeah, I want to get on to Gaza, obviously the Middle East, and Borrell has been in the UAE. Sorry to interrupt there, but Borrell still obviously supports the massive sending of arms for the Ukraine proxy war. And actually,
I'm not defending them.
I thought you were going to be with him when he retires. He's outgoing anyway now. No, but what about Ireland, where you're from? I mean, Michelle O'Donnell and the Sinn Féiners, who run the northern part of what's seen as British-occupied Northern Ireland, I mean, they've been on this show. Mary Lou McDonald's been on this show. They seemed quite nice a few years ago, going underground. People can look at it. Probably been banned, those videos. Ireland, I know you fought against Ireland being a proxy for US torture flights in Shannon Airport, but what's happened to that country vis-a-vis Ukraine?
Yeah, with regard to Ukraine, the politicians right across the board in all the parties have not been good on Ukraine. They have refused to call it out as a proxy war. It's clear to all that this is a US-NATO proxy war that the West were happy to see happen. They had done nothing. They did nothing to stop the war starting in the first place, and they've done nothing to stop it since it started. They've done nothing to establish peace. And sadly, in Ireland, our politicians have done nothing about it either. I mean, they're probably the one standout politician in Ireland who's actually talked some sense about what's going on in Ukraine has been our president, Michael D. Higgins. And Michael D. Higgins has been very impressive, but the actual elected members in the parliament have been very disappointing. And one of the main reasons for that is that they're scared of the media. Most politicians are scared of the mainstream media. And myself and Claire Daly were written off as Putin puppets because we wanted peace. We wanted peace, so we're called Putin puppets. I mean, it was totally irrational, but people bought it. And, you know, people actually thought, oh, my God, they're taking sides in the war and they're with the Russians. They're not with with us, with the Ukrainians and the Europeans. The truth be told, it was horrific how much the European Union did nothing to stop this war starting. And I had Stoltenberg. I was at a committee in the European Parliament where the NATO boss, Jens Stoltenberg, came in and he boasted about provoking the war. He boasted about the fact that 3 months before the war broke out, that the Russians had been in contact with him and they had laid down their red lines and said that the fact that they wanted less NATO, they wanted Ukraine to stay neutral, they wanted obviously the Minsk agreement put into place, and they wanted the missiles in Eastern European countries that were aimed at Russia removed. And they said that this was their condition for not invading Ukraine. And he laughed about the fact that, well, of course, we were never going to agree to that. And he says, what Russia have got now, well, they wanted less NATO, they're getting more of it. And he was proud of that. And he boasted then about the fact that military spending in 2023 in Europe increased by 8%. Military spending. What a waste of money. When we have a housing crisis, people can't get proper healthcare. We have cuts in education. Social infrastructure has been hit. And sadly, Ireland has rode in with the US-NATO proxy war in Ukraine. We haven't given them arms because we don't make them, but we have supported them in line with what von der Leyen wanted.
Mick Wallace, I'll stop you there. More from the Irish politician and former member of the European Parliament after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Irish politician who served as a member of the European Parliament, Mick Wallace. Mick, you were talking in part one about the NATO boss Stoltenberg's laughter as Ukraine was used in this proxy war. You mentioned Claire Daly, who's also been on this programme, another Irish MEP who was in the European Parliament. But you said that some of them didn't believe in the proxy war, but nevertheless voted through all the American secret state agendas. Is it that, or is it other things as well that forced these MEPs to vote not with their consciences, but with their with Washington?
Look, I mean,
you said the media.
Okay, the media does play a big role. Now we also know that you know, there's a huge lobbying industry in Brussels. It probably it's hardly shocking to some people that money may change hands sometimes too. And there was an episode of that in relation to Qatar. But I mean, that was only the tip of the iceberg. And we don't really know for sure what's going on.
The accounts aren't audited. We had the EU infamous whistleblower auditor who said the accounts aren't audited for the European Commission.
Yeah, look, I mean, the workings of the EU leaves a lot to be desired in many ways. But just to go back to the point about why are so many of the elected members prepared to be puppets to US interest? Well, I mean, do you know, there's just over 700 MEPs in the European Parliament. There's over 60,000 lobbyists in Brussels. Over 60,000. There's over 12,000 registered lobbying companies. Over 12,000 companies with an average of about five people working in them. That gives us over 60,000 lobbyists for just over 700 MEPs. What do these lobbyists do? Who pays them? How do they make a living? If they are not effective at their work at influencing the politicians in the Parliament and the commissioners in the Commission, and the guys in the council, if they weren't effective at lobbying them, would they get paid? Would there be so many of them? People need to look at that. Lobbying is like a cancer to any notion of democracy that we have. And this does also play a role in the decision-making of the MEPs when they go to vote. But I did say that not all of them agreed with how they were voting. A number of MEPs contacted myself and Claire Daly around certain votes, and they said, fair play to you, we'd love to have your courage to do what you do. We actually agree with you, but we can't go to that space or we would be demonised at home by the media.
Yeah, people might laugh at being accused of being a Putin puppet. I understand that you actually were involved in some legal action for defamation as regards that. I mean, now everyone is a Putin. I mean, Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump is a Putin apologist, infamously. What about that campaign? And that's part of, say, there can't even be a free media in Europe because, of course, RT is banned. Now it's banned in the United States, even, apparently, where it has a First Amendment.
Well, listen, you have organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy, which is funded by the Americans. They boast about investing in independent media in all countries around Europe. So what are they doing with the money? Who gets it? Independent media. What's independent media? Is independent media someone that spouts out the US line? Is the independent media, are they the people that protects US interests? Or are they people that tell the truth about what's really happening? I don't think so. You don't really get paid by anyone for telling the truth about what's really going on. But you'd have a good chance of getting some investment in some form or other, provided you were toeing the line and keeping on the right side of things.
I mean, you think they're pretty proud then in Washington. I mean, you spoke in Parliament about the legacy of the CIA Operation Gladio. We actually did a show about this recently, Going Underground show. You spoke in the European Parliament with respect to Cuba. Obviously, now the EU is talking about Venezuela. I will go to Palestine in a minute, but has that been since post-45? And it was as expected when you were in the European Parliament, the fertile ground for American interests to dominate the elites in Europe so that there was no representatives or very few representatives, or you and Claire Daly in the European Parliament, yeah, really talking about the poor and the underclasses as opposed to the elite interests of Western Europe.
Yeah, I mean, the Americans have had a huge interest and a huge influence in Europe, in particular since the end of the Second World War. I mean, the Second World War ended in 45, and in 49, the US formed NATO, and NATO was formed not as a deterrent or a defense alliance against possible Soviet Union expansion. NATO was formed by the Americans to keep the Europeans in check, in order so that the Europeans wouldn't be going off and doing things on their own bat without America's blessing. So really what NATO was doing, the Americans were putting the Europeans in their pocket by establishing NATO. And NATO, you mentioned Operation Gladio, which a lot of...
You're in Italy at the moment.
I am. And the truth was, I mean, that actually came up in the European Parliament in 1990, and there was a resolution voted through calling for an investigation into the workings of NATO in Operation Gladio in Italy. And we know that NATO worked with the mafia and with Nazis in Italy in order to undermine left-wing movements. And yet, NATO was presented to us as if it was this was something, a positive organization of some sort. We have the EU under the guidance of von der Leyen getting closer and closer to NATO to a point where it's starting to look like NATO are actually making some of the decisions in the European Union at the moment. And that is absolutely scary. NATO are like a terrorist organization. They have left a trail of blood and destruction behind them everywhere they've gone. Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Yemen, Syria. NATO has nothing positive to offer the people of Europe. It never had. It has got nothing to do with peace. And as I said to some of the military fellows that came into one of our committees, who was advocating that the European member states spend more and more money on weapons because, the big bad bear, Russia, is going to come and take over the place. And I said to him, I said, tell me, I said, you're looking to promote the production and more of machines that kill people. They're designed to kill people. I said, you're making money from misery, I said. You're promoting war because you can't sell your stuff unless there's war. I said, if I was making raincoats, I said, and selling raincoats, I said to him, I wouldn't be able to sell them if it didn't rain. So I said, you can't sell your merchandise unless there's war. So ye promote war. Ye make money off the misery of others. And don't forget, of all that, there's hundreds of thousands dead in Ukraine, and the EU couldn't give a damn about them. And not only that, but these are working-class Ukrainians that have been sacrificed for the Western geopolitical interests. And I condemn the Russian invasion. I disagree with war. I'm for peace. But the Western role has been terrible as well, horrific. And they are promoting the military-industrial complex now. We're feeding money to it. We're spending billions and billions keeping this war in Ukraine going. We're spending billions... And we're building up our defense capacity, and we're enriching the military-industrial complex for no good reason. The people of Europe don't want that. They want the money spent on social infrastructure and on services.
Well, there are some critics of Putin who said that he should have invaded years before after the Maidan coup and saved the lives of the people in eastern Ukraine, arguably. And now Borrell is gone. It's going to be this Kaya Kallas woman who wants the breakup of Russia. Presumably one of the war aims since the Maidan coup in 2014. She was Estonian prime minister. She's going to be the foreign policy chief of where you used to work. How is it going to change as, I don't know whether it'll change depending on what's happening in November in the United States, as regards Gaza, because obviously it's these European nations that are backing to the hilt the military weapons pouring into Israel for the genocide. Simultaneously, they are pouring in weapons, even more than the Americans, into Ukraine. How do you expect it to change ahead of November and after November?
Well, in relation to Gaza, well, whether Trump or Harris is in power, I don't see much difference. Whether Trump will be better on Ukraine remains to be seen. If he does get in, I'm going to see 50-50 as to which he can get in. But... Gaza has been a game changer for the people of Europe. And I think the mask has slipped. And the European Union that had shared values with Israel, the European Union who regarded the US and Israel, their like-minded partners, the same European Union has not been able to condemn Israel. They haven't been able to call out the genocide for what it is. We had von der Leyen and we had the parliament president, Metsola, go to Tel Aviv and more or less tell the Israelis they could do whatever they like, as if nothing ever happened before October 7th. They tried to isolate October 7th and pretend that there was nothing bad happening before that. Gaza was in a bad place before October 7th, and the genocide had been going on since 1948. And all through that time, the US and the Europeans tolerated it. So it wasn't a big shock that they tolerated after October 7th. But we have seen this time, we've seen it on our mobile phones. We have seen a genocide taking place before our eyes. And we have seen the Europeans and the Americans complicit in this genocide. So the European Union that cares about human rights and humanitarian law, well, all of a sudden they don't care about it at all. But the truth is that it is well described as the European Union of hypocrisy. We care about human rights when it suits us. They were very worried about the women in Iran because they weren't being treated well enough by the government. But we had no problem with Israel killing probably about 15,000 women in Gaza and even more children. That's okay, is it? And we do care about women, do we? Oh, we care about human rights, or do we? Oh, do you know what we do? We care about human rights when it suits us, and we don't care about it when it doesn't suit us. It has to be in our geopolitical interest before we show any interest in it. And this has really exposed the hypocrisy of what the European Union stands for to the people of Europe. The people of Europe are shocked, are genuinely shocked that the EU, the European countries and the Americans have been totally complicit in a genocide against the Palestinian people. We have never, ever seen anything as brutal as this Israeli regime, ever. And we are still silent about what's happening.
Mick Wallace, thank you.
No bother. Nice talking to you. Good luck.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US EU armed genocide. We'll be back for a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.